in my present condition.
We made it through lunch with fewer than normal complaints, and several diners took selfies with Lula and Hal.
This is most interesting, Raymond said. We have become a theme deli. I have some black leather chaps in my closet for special occasions that I might wear tomorrow. They would be appropriate for the fry station because they only expose my butt cheeks. I would not be in jeopardy of getting splatter burns on my sensitive frontal private areas.
I glanced over at Raymond. If you wear chaps tomorrow, I'll turn you into immigration.
That would be cruel, Raymond said.
Making me look at you in chaps would be cruel, I said.
Not so, Raymond said. I have firm butt cheeks with silky smooth skin. I am excellent to see in chaps.
I'd be willing to take a look, Lula said. Hell, I'll look at anything.
Stretch snapped on rubber gloves and lined up 6 roasted chicken breasts for slicing.
I'd sooner pour bleach in my eyes.
Hal looked like he was ready to get in line for the eye bleach. Connie called.
You need to come to the office, Connie said. Now.
What's up? I asked.
Just get back here.
I'm wanted at the bonds office, I said to Lula.
I'll go with you, Lula said. There's no one wanting sandwiches now.
I'll drive, Hal said.
Chapter 10 Shades were down. The closed sign was in the window, and the door was locked when we got to the office. I knocked on the door, and Connie opened it a crack and looked out.
Thank goodness you're here, she said. I have a situation.
We stepped inside and gave a collective gasp. Vinny was standing in the middle of the room. He was buck naked, and he was swaying back and forth, back and forth.
I can tell you right off, I'd rather be looking at Raymond's butt cheeks, Lula said.
I found him standing by the trash can in the parking lot, Connie said. He was just standing there, swaying.
His eyes were completely dilated, his mouth was open, and he was drooling.
What happened to you? I asked him. I don't think he can talk, Connie said. I think he might be drugged.
This looks to me like the work of aliens, Lula said. I bet they sucked out his brain.
Did you call the police? I asked Connie.
No, I only called you. I wasn't sure what to do with him. I was hoping he would come around.
We should call Lucille, I said.
Yeah, and tell her to bring some clothes on account of her husband is in his altogether, Lula said.
We all stared down at Vinny's foot. It was in his shoe.
I guess I could amend that to his almost altogether, Lula said. You gotta respect an alien that has the decency to return a man in his shoe.
Vinny, I yelled, blink if you can hear me.
Yeah, Vinny said without blinking.
Yeah, yeah.
I called Morelli. I need you to come to the bonds office, I said. Now? There was a beat of silence.
Can you be more specific?
I don't want to ruin the surprise.
Are you naked?
No, but you're in the ballpark.
I'll be there in a couple minutes.
What's that mark on Vinny's forehead? Lula asked.
I leaned in and looked at the mark. It's a number, I said. It looks like it's been tattooed on. Vinny is number 37.
I saw that in a movie, Lula said. The aliens tattooed numbers on people they abducted so they could keep track of them after they sucked their brains out. The aliens were breeding the humans like cattle. Every morning they would collect the sperm from the brainless males, and then they would use a turkey baster to impregnate the females. It was a product of the adult film industry, but it had some thoughtful content.
Hal was looking up at the ceiling and down at his shoes, trying not to stare at naked Vinny.
Maybe Vinny wants a donut, Lula said to Connie. You have any left?
Connie took the donut box out of the trash.
There's one left, she said. It's a little stale, but it looks okay.
Lula offered it to Vinny.
Would Vinny like a donut?
Yeah,
Vinny said. He snatched the donut from Lula and shoved it into his mouth. There was a lot of chewing and drooling, and through it all he kept swaying. A chunk of donut fell out of his mouth onto the floor. He didn't seem to notice.
Good, Vinny, Lula said. Good boy.
She turned to me.
Someone should take him outside to tinkle.
He's not a dog, I said.
They did that in the film,
Lula said. The brainless males were like dogs. They went outside to tinkle and poop. They did the sperm collection inside. It was pretty interesting. They had a lot of different ways to go about getting the sperm. Do you want to know what they did?
No, Connie said. Not without a glass of wine.
Hal made a sound like he was swallowing his tongue. Maybe some other time, I told Lula. Morelli knocked once and came inside. He looked at me, and then he looked at Vinny.
Holy crap, Morelli said.
Connie found him in the parking lot, I said. He's got the other shoe on.
Yeah, I noticed that right away, Morelli said. That and the fact that he's naked and has a number tattooed on his forehead.
I got a theory about that, Lula said.
What's the theory about the dilated eyes and the drooling?
Morelli asked. He seems to be a little drugged, I said. Maybe we should have him checked out.
Can he talk?
Yeah, Vinny said.
Morelli squelched a grimace.
Can he say anything besides, yeah?
Not yet, I said. We were hoping he would come around. Morelli put a call in for an EMT transport. A half hour later, Vinny was being wheeled into the ER, and Lucille was on her way to the hospital. Morelli took me aside.
What's with the range man guy?
I asked Ranger to install security cameras at the deli, and he decided I needed personal security as well. So, I have Hal.
Lucky you. Is Hal watching the game with us tonight?
No game. I have a takedown tonight after I close the deli. Hal's gonna help.
Do I want to know about this?
No. Morelli kissed me on the forehead.
I have to get back to my desk to finish today's paperwork. Be careful tonight.
Connie stayed with Vinny. Lula, Hal, and I went back to the deli. Raymond was alone in the kitchen when we walked in. Where's Stretch? I asked.
I have him locked in the pantry. He took some of the bonus pills and he got very silly.
How silly? I asked.
He is a little hallucinogenic. There was a moment when he was talking to his chef's knife and I became concerned, so I bribed him into the pantry with a jar of mayonnaise and then I locked the door.
Is he in there with the knife?
Nope. I confiscated the knife. He and the knife appeared to be having a disagreement.
I went to the pantry and knocked on the door. No answer. I knocked again.
Maybe he has fallen asleep, Raymond said.
I unlocked the door and peeked inside. Stretch was sitting on the floor eating out of the mayonnaise jar with his finger. He looked up at me and giggled. I closed and locked the door.
He's okay, I said.
Dahlia rushed in.
Sorry I'm late, she said. I had car trouble.
Several customers had come in behind her.
We need someone to be the new Stretch, Raymond said. I must tend to my fry station.
I blew out a sigh. I'll do it. Give me a menu so I have a cheat sheet. Dahlia slapped an order onto the counter.
I've got a 16 and a 32 with extra cheese and a number 9 hold the onions.
A 9 is a burger, Lula said. Here's your roll. Put it on the grill with the burger. I got the 16.
32 was a chili dog. I could do that. I threw a hot dog on the grill with the burger. Dahlia put another order on the counter.
I need 2 number 12s and a side of fries, she said.
I need fries, I yelled at Raymond, and 2 12s.
I do not do 12s, Raymond said. 12 is a microwave.
Lula handed me a plate.
Here's my 16. You need to finish it off.
I stared down at it.
What is it?
It's a number 16, Lula said.
Yeah, but what is it?
It's egg salad on a croissant. I ran out of egg salad, so I mixed in some tuna salad. I figure it's all done with mayo, right?
It's not on a croissant.
I thought it would go better on a hamburger bun.
I put lettuce, tomato, and some pickles on the plate and set it on the counter for pickup. I put the burger in the bun and plated it up with pickles and fries.
Where's my 32? Dahlia said.
Coming, I yelled. I had the hot dog, but no bun. The hot dog buns were still in the pantry. I ran to the pantry, opened the door, grabbed the package of buns, and ran back to my station.
Order up, I yelled, throwing some chopped onions and chili on the hot dog. Fries for the 12, Raymond said.
I had no idea what constituted a 12.
I need something that looks like a 12, I said to Lula. I need 2 of them. There's no cheese on my extra cheese dog, Delia said, and I need a party Italian to go.
I turned and bumped into Stretch. He'd escaped from the pantry.
Mary had a little lamb, he said. Its fleece was white as snow.
He looked up and stuck out his tongue like he was catching snowflakes. Hal was watching from the end of the counter.
Do you want me to put him back in the pantry?
Can you make 2 12s? I asked Stretch.
Yes, Stretch said. I'm Princess Twilight Sparkle, and I can do anything because I ate the magic whiteness.
First off, he isn't nearly Princess Twilight Sparkle, Lula said. That happens to be my favorite little pony. And what the heck is magic whiteness? Is that some racial thing?
He ate a jar of mayo, I said. The big one.
That'll go through you like goose grease, Lula said. We all might want to stand back in case, you know.
I am Princess Twilight Sparkle, Stretch said. I know because I can see inside my head and it's rainbow colors.
He pulled 2 cutlets out of the under-the-counter fridge. He put his nose to the cutlets and sniffed.
They smell like pink and green happiness, he said. Pink and green is the best kind of happiness.
So true, I said. About the number 12?
Stretch put the cutlets into the microwave and gave them a minute while he sang a la-la-la-la song. He added marinara sauce and cheese and gave it all 30 seconds.
Do you like my ponytail?
He asked me.
It's more rainbow color, and it's sprinkled with pixie dust so I can fly.
I looked over at Hal and I mouthed, is he kidding? Hal grinned and shrugged.
Would you like to see me fly?
Stretch asked. Maybe later, I told him. Can you make a party Italian to go?
Yes, and I can catch the snowflakes on my tongue while I make it.
Princess Twilight Sparkle can stay, I said to Hal. Just don't let him near any knives.
We hung the close sign on the door at 9 o'clock. Mike was a no-show. Princess Twilight Sparkle was on the floor behind the register, sleeping off his blue pill hangover. Connie had reported that Vinny was admitted to the hospital for observation. 7 garbage bags were lined up in the hall, leading to the back door.
What about all this garbage? Hal asked.
We'll take it out in the morning when the central GP truck shows up, I said. That seems to be a safe time.
Not for me, Lula said. I'm not going out that back door no matter what time of day it is. I don't want to end up being one of the brainless breeder women.
Are you talking about the film where the aliens abducted people to raise them like cattle? Raymond asked. That was an excellent film. Thought-provoking, and I was surprised at some of the methods they used to extract sperm. Some were shockingly innovative, although many were labor-intensive.
My feelings exactly, Lula said.
I looked around. The place was a mess. Food on the floor, mustard and ketchup smeared on workstations, cheese melted onto the grill, grease everywhere. It had been a nerve-wracking, exhausting dinner shift. And now we were faced with the cleanup.
Sometimes when we are coming down from the many drugs we must take to make it through the night in this hellhole kitchen, we leave the cleanup to morning, Raymond said.
Everyone in favor, raise their hand, Lula said, raising her hand.
That's okay with me, I said, but we should at least shovel the food off the floor.
It will be an easier job in the morning if you allow the roaches and rodents to eat their share, Raymond said. I have had some experience in this area.
Sounds like a plan to me, Lula said.
We roused Stretch and shuffled him out the door. Once we had him outside, we loaded him into the Rangeman SUV along with Lula and me. He lived within walking distance of the deli, but we didn't trust him to walk home. He no longer thought he was Princess Twilight Sparkle, but he looked like he was on the low side of smart. Hal parked, walked Stretch to his door, and turned him over to his roommate, Bucky.
How'd that go? Lula asked Hal.
Bucky will keep an eye on him, Hal said. It's kind of a shame the pill wore off. He was so happy being Twilight Sparkle.
When will Armpits be playing? I asked Hal.
They're not the first band. They usually start around 10 or 11. They play for a couple hours and then another band takes over. Usually the Beggar Boys or the Howling Dogs.
You know the Snake Pit, I said. What's the best way to do this?
Everyone comes and goes from the left side of the stage, Hal said. They keep a corridor sort of clear for the band people, and there's a door to the outside. I don't know what's out there. Probably a bunch of people hanging around. Maybe a parking area. I guess I'd wait until the band was done, and then I'd either take Victor down when he goes out the door, or I'd follow him when he leaves and wait for the right time.
Will we be able to get to the stage door?
I don't know,
Hal said.
I've never tried. Melton Street runs parallel to Stark. I'll drive down Melton and try to get a look at the back of the pit.
We saw the lights when we were blocks away. Bright ambient light from floods in an area that was otherwise dark. Buildings were gutted and unoccupied for several blocks at this end of Stark. Streetlights had been shot out and never replaced. Car traffic was usually minimal here. Tonight, though, there was activity.
Damn, Lula said. This is lit up like Vegas. How come I didn't know about this? They got a party going here.
It's an open-air drug fair,
Hal said.
They sell stuff here that makes the blue pill Stretch took look like kids' candy.
Melton Street wasn't high rent, but it wasn't Stark either. People lived on the end blocks of Melton. There were seniors sticking it out because they had no other place to go. Homeless souls hunkered down in buildings that had been condemned, and runaway, drugged-out kids sheltered in hallways and abandoned apartments. Hal cruised down Melton and stopped when he thought he was behind the pit.
This isn't helping, Lula said. I can't see past these broken-down buildings.
Tenement-style row houses were smashed together, blocking our view. We could see strobe lights flashing across the sky, emanating from Stark, but we couldn't see between the grimy, graffiti-covered structures. There was on-street parking here, but no one dared leave a car unattended. This wasn't a problem for the residents, because if you were unfortunate enough to need to live here, you for sure couldn't afford a car. Hal turned at the corner and drove towards Stark. He stopped at a checkpoint, handed over a $50 parking fee, and was allowed to proceed and park wherever he could find a spot in the two-block area that had been cordoned off. He pulled into a slot, cut the engine, and got a windbreaker from the back seat. Cars were streaming in behind us. The people getting out of the cars were young, high schoolers, millennials. The cars, for the most part, were new and compact. Clothes were a mix of early Britney Spears and Seattle grunge. Hal shrugged into the windbreaker, hiding his rangeman patch and holstered gun. Lula fluffed up her magenta hair and tugged her spandex skirt down over her ass. I followed behind, feeling like Frump Girl in my jeans and t-shirt and plain brown ponytail. The parking area and the front of the warehouse were lit. Not quite as bright as daylight, but bright enough to buy and sell drugs, sex, and Snake Pit t-shirts. Two garage bay doors had been rolled up, allowing people to enter and exit what had now become the Snake Pit. A band called the Romanian Slippery Unicorn was already on stage, blasting out music that was so bass-heavy I was getting heart arrhythmia. The lighting was lower inside. A cannabis and menthol vapor haze hung over the crowd. Hal took point to get to the front, plowing through what appeared to be an army of stoner zombies. Lula followed Hal, waving her arms in the air, bobbing her head and swinging her ass like she was on Soul Train. I stayed in Lula's wake. We got close enough to see when Rockin' Armpits and Victor Waggle were about to take the stage. Hal changed direction and moved us left, so we'd be in a good position when they finished playing and headed for the exit. Hal watched the band and the crowd in full-on rangeman protective mode. Lula took selfies, posted them for her Facebook friends, and looked like she knew what the band was playing. I focused on Victor Waggle and did shallow breathing, hoping to minimize the contact high. At 11:30, I saw Victor look to the side of the stage and nod to someone. Hal saw it too and began to move us toward the side exit. 10 minutes later, the band played their last song, waved at the audience, and bounded off the stage. We made an effort to follow them, but were stopped at the door. Lula adjusted the girls and leaned forward.
Hold on here, she said to the doorman. We're special friends of all them armpits. We have a personal relationship. You can ask anybody except for the little guy with the green hair. We don't know him personal. Furthermore, I've had a request from certain members of the band to pay a visit and work my magic. They're going to be unhappy if you don't let Lula through to work magic.
Okay, you can go in, the doorman said, but only you.
No way, Lula said. I don't go nowhere without my security detail. When you got talents like I got, you need people around who know CPR and shit.
Most of Lula's boobs had jiggled out by now, with only her massive nipples caught inside the bustier. The doorman was having a hard time looking past the trapped nipple to the security detail.
Whatever, he said. Maybe you want to save some of that magic for me.
When I'm done with you, your dick will never be the same, Lula said. I'll ruin you.
We all hurried through the door and looked around for Victor Waggle. Lighting was minimal, supplied mostly by mag lights and cell phone flashlights. There were 30 to 40 people milling around in the small outdoor space. Some looked like the band about to go on stage next. Some looked like groupies and roadies. Some looked like event security. I spotted Russell Frick off to one side, packing his drum set into a cart. Hey, I said, remember me?
Bounty hunter.
Yeah. Is Victor here somewhere?
He went up front to find a meal ticket.
How do I get up front from here? Frick pointed to the narrow alley between the buildings.
Follow the yellow brick road.
I grabbed Hal and Lula, and we ran down the alley to Stark. People were standing around talking, smoking, checking out street vendors. Victor Waggle was with several women in front of a food truck that was selling hot dogs. It looked like he was autographing photos. We did a flanking maneuver and sneaked up behind him. I had my cuffs ready and was about to clap one on his wrist when one of the women yelled, "Pig!" Victor whirled around, saw the cuff, and jumped away. One of the women kicked me in the knee, and two others pulled out guns.
That's rude, Lula said to the woman who kicked me. What's the matter with you? You don't kick sisters for no cause.
I got lots of cause, the woman said. I'm loaded with cause. And she kicked Lula. Lula swung her purse and hit the woman square in the face, knocking her off her feet. Someone squeezed off a couple shots that took out a piece of Lula's magenta hair before they embedded themselves in the hot dog truck. Everyone either hit the ground or ran for cover.
I've been shot. Lula screamed. Lordy, someone help me, I've been shot.
She just got you in the hair, I said. Hal had the shooter by the back of her shirt. He was holding her at arm's length, with her feet not touching the ground. He had her gun in his other hand.
What do you want me to do with her?
He asked. Put her down. We lost Waggle. He ran when she started shooting. Hal looked around.
It's going to be hard to find him now.
We can try again tomorrow, I said.
Not me, Lula said. I'm not coming back here. These people have no respect. I got shoved and kicked and shot at, and I got my hair ruined.
She felt around where her hair had been shot off.
It's not like hair grows on trees, she said.
Chapter 11. It was Friday morning. The sun was shining. My range man escort was on my bumper. I was on my way to the bond's office. I was going more out of habit than necessity. Realistically speaking, I only had one open file, and chances of making that capture this morning were close to zero, unless Victor Waggle staggered into the road in a drug-induced stupor and I accidentally ran over him. Lula was eating the Boston cream donut when I walked in.
I never expected to get the good donut today, Lula said to me. It took me forever to figure out what to do with my hair. I couldn't get a salon appointment until tomorrow. Why are you late?
I didn't want to start my day.
I hear you, Lula said. I'm getting the feeling our life is going south. We're not having a lot of luck being bounty hunters, and the deli is turning into the kitchen from hell. I'm not even sure about my career as a sandwich maker anymore. I feel like I'm underappreciated by some of the customers.
Maybe because they never get what they order.
Yeah, but I'm giving them a unique culinary experience. It's called haute cuisine. I read about it in a magazine while I was waiting to get my nails done. I'm all about haute cuisine and haute couture. I bet I could haute couture the hell out of anyone in Trenton.
No doubt. At the moment, she was wearing a blonde Farrah Fawcett wig, a fire engine red sequin tank top, a short spandex purple skirt that had metallic silver threads running through it, and 5-inch silver platform heels. "What's the word on Vinny?" I asked Connie.
"He's supposed to go home today."
"Is he talking? Did he say what happened to him?"
"He's talking, but I don't think he can remember anything about his abduction. At least that's what he told Lucille. Morelli might know more."
I called Morelli and asked him about Vinny.
"He seems to be healthy," Morelli said. "No signs of torture or abuse. Turns out the number on his forehead wasn't tattooed. It was put on with a marker pen. The last thing he remembers is getting out of his car in the parking area behind the agency. Toxicology reports haven't come back yet, but I'm sure they're going to find some sort of amnesiac drug in his system. He had needle tracks on his arm."
"And his shoe?"
"Clean, but again, all the lab work isn't back."
"I wish you would solve this, because the deli job is getting old."
"I hate to pass this on to you, but we've got zip. We're counting on you to figure it out."
"Oh, boy."
"I have to get back to my blood and guts job," Morelli said. "I'll see you tonight. We're still on for dinner at your parents' house, right?"
"Crap, I completely forgot. I have to work at the deli."
"I thought this was a birthday party for your sister."
"Double crap."
I disconnected and looked at Lula. "I need to get a birthday present for Valerie."
"You forgot your sister's birthday, didn't you?" Lula said. "That's terrible. Shame on you."
"I have other stuff on my mind, like staying alive."
"What are you going to get her?" Lula asked.
"I don't know. I hate the whole present thing. I never know what to get anyone."
"I give people gift cards," Lula said. "You could buy them in the supermarket. They're easy. There's gift cards for everything from Starbucks to Target and in between. I like them on account of the message they send. I figure it puts people on notice. A gift card says, 'I feel obligated to get you something, but I don't care enough to put any effort into finding just the right gift.' Gives people some idea of their place in your life. You see what I'm saying?"
"You gave me a gift card for Christmas," I said to Lula.
"Yeah," Lula said, "but I put some thought into which one to get you. I gave you a card for that big liquor store on Liberty Street."
"I'm heading for the deli," I said. "The kitchen needs cleaning."
"We need one of them cleaning services," Lula said. "You can't expect a sandwich artist like me to be scrubbing floors. I need to focus my energy in the direction of ham and cheese."
I wanted to focus my energy in the direction of turning the deli into a pile of smoldering cinders, but that wasn't going to help me find Wayne Kulicki.
"A cleaning service is a great idea," I said. "You're in charge of finding one. In the meantime, someone needs to scrape the grease off the grill and scoop up the dead roaches before we start serving lunch." It was 9:30 when we got to the deli. Stretch was already there, sitting on the sidewalk with his back to the front door. He stood when he saw me.
"Did I put sauerkraut on a number 22?
He asked. "Yes," I said, "and ketchup. You put ketchup on everything, including lemon meringue pie."
"I thought it needed a splash of color."
"You were in My Little Pony Land."
"It was my happy place,"
Stretch said.
"It wasn't my happy place," Lula said. "You were out there, wackadoodle. I take my sandwiches seriously, and I don't want some doper coming around adding extra condiments."
Raymond ambled down the street and nodded in greeting.
"I'm hoping that when we open the door, the deli will be magically cleaned," he said. "I have it on very good authority that sometimes the Tooth Fairy has a light day and does these things."
"I'm hoping that's your sense of humor and not coming from something extra you put in your wake-up weed," Lula said.
Raymond did more head-bobbing.
"I have a very excellent sense of humor."
Hal drove up. My night shift rangeman guy drove off, and Hal parked in his spot behind my Nova. I plugged my key into the deli's front door, reached in and switched the light on, and we all waited outside for a moment while the roaches scurried out of sight. The laundry pickup and delivery came at 10:30. The butcher truck came 10 minutes later, and Central GP honked their horn in the back lot a little after 11.
"Sorry I'm late," Frankie said. "Fridays are always nuts. Everyone ordering for the weekend, except the deli. You get commuter trade here. Weekends, not so much."
"I'm sure we're one of your smaller accounts," I said. "I'm surprised that you stop in every day. The other suppliers come twice a week."
"You're in between Muncher's Italian and the Corner Grill. They get fresh bread daily, so it's no biggie for me to stop here."
Plus, he distributes drugs, I thought. Stretch and Raymond were good customers.
I hear you've got a new menu, Frankie said. How's it doing?
It's not exactly a new menu, I said. It's mostly like the sandwich maker is overly creative.
Who's making these sandwiches? Is it the big guy?
Hal? No, Hal is working the phone and keeping an eye on things.
You mean, like, he's the manager now?
He's more like security.
Yeah, you got a problem. It's gotta be scary to work here and wonder who's gonna be the next one to disappear and lose a shoe. I'm surprised this place is still in business.
You know about that?
Everyone knows about that, Frankie said.
I signed the receipt for the day's delivery of rolls, paper towels, avocados, mayo, and a quart-sized plastic bag labeled oregano. Who gets the oregano? I asked Frankie.
Raymond, it's for the French fries.
A news crew from one of the local television stations walked through the front door at 1 o'clock and began filming. They panned around the dining area and made their way back to the kitchen. Raymond grabbed his bag of oregano and ducked down.
I must go to the little boy's room, he said. Do not let my fry station go out of control.
Stretch and Dahlia went about business as usual. Lula ripped her apron off and adjusted the girls.
I bet they heard about my sandwiches, Lula said. This could be the start of a big television career for me. I haven't got a name for my show. I'm going to call it Lula's Buns, on account of my best sandwiches are made on those smushy hamburger buns we get from the truck.
I wasn't nearly so excited about the television crew. My mind was racing down black roads of panic. I didn't want to announce to the world that I was the manager of the deli. I didn't want publicity that might bring in more customers when we could barely service our regulars. Plus, we had giant roaches, mutant rats, half the stuff in the fridge expired months ago, and there was green fuzzy stuff growing in the pantry. Raymond was probably flushing his oregano down the toilet, but God knows what everyone had in their lockers. The television crew consisted of a cameraman, a reporter in a wrinkled suit, and a guy who said he was the producer. The producer was wearing Jesus sandals and looked like he slept in a cardboard box under the bridge. The reporter went directly to Lula.
How does it feel to be an internet sensation? He asked her.
Lula leaned forward.
Say what? Yesterday you had 20,000 likes on your YouTube video.
I didn't post no video, Lula said.
I saw it, Dahlia said. It was posted by a customer. It was titled S&M Sandwich Bitch, and it was you in your black leathers making sandwiches and cussing out Stretch.
He was ruining my sandwiches, Lula said. He was putting ketchup on everything. I take my sandwiches seriously.
Who are you today?
The reporter asked Lula.
Are you Doris Day?
I could see you don't know much about Doris Day, Lula said. If I was Doris Day, I'd have on a pillbox hat and I'd be wearing a fluffy pink sweater. And anyways, I'm always Lula. I don't do that other people's shit.
Lula looked at the camera guy.
Can I say shit on television?
No, he said. We'll have to bleep that out.
That's too bad, Lula said. I emoted it with real conviction. It could have been a good soundbite.
The reporter looked at the sandwich Lula was making.
What is this?
He asked.
It's a chicken parm, Lula said.
It doesn't look like a chicken parm.
That's because without any extra charge, I'm giving this person a chicken parm supreme a la Lula. I added bacon and brown gravy on account of everything is better with bacon and gravy.
The cameraman zoomed in on the supreme a la Lula.
Order up, Stretch yelled. Where's my chicken parm? Where are my fries?
There aren't any fries, I said. Raymond is in the little boy's room. It might have something to do with the oregano.
I need a number 23 and a number 4, Dahlia said.
The cameraman swung around to get a shot of Dahlia and clipped Stretch's arm with his camera. The chef's knife got knocked out of Stretch's hand, fell to the floor, and impaled the producer's foot. Time stood still for a full minute while everyone stared in shocked horror.
Holy bleep! Lula said.
Stretch pulled the knife out of the guy's foot and blood spurted everywhere. The cameraman went in for a close-up and Hal fainted. Crash!
I knew that chicken parm, Dahlia said, and table 3 wants apple pie.
Chicken parm's up, Stretch said. It's a plate that looks like diarrhea on bacon.
I wrapped a towel around the producer's foot and Lula bound it up with plastic wrap.
What's happening? One of the customers asked. What's going on?
We got an issue here, Lula told him. Any of you people a podiatrist?
No one was a podiatrist, so we scooped the producer up and helped him hobble out to the news van. Sorry about this, I said to the reporter. I hope it won't reflect badly on the deli.
Lady, with the reputation this deli is getting, a stabbing can only enhance it, the reporter said.
Hal was sitting in a booth when we got back inside, but he wasn't looking great. Lula gave him a number 3 with extra gravy and a glass of orange juice. Dahlia took a mop to the blood on the kitchen floor. Stretch washed his chef's knife and poured bleach over it. We comped the checks for all the customers and got Raymond out of the bathroom.
Now we're all back to normal, Lula said. I might take the time to get my nails done before the dinner rush since I'm changing out my hair tomorrow. I'm liking this blonde wig, and I might want to stay blonde for a while so people can recognize me after I've been on television. I'm thinking I'll go blonde, and maybe I want some champagne nail varnish.
I have to get Valerie a birthday present, I said, and then I need to show up for a party at my parents' house. I'll get back to clothes, but I won't be here for dinner.
No problem, Lula said. We got it covered.
What about Mr. Muscle? Stretch asked. Is he going to the party, or can he work phones for us?
Do you mind working phones? I asked Hal.
If it's okay with Ranger, it's okay with me, Hal said.
Where are you going shopping? Lula asked. Do you have ideas for Valerie?
I have no ideas. I thought I'd go to the mall and look around.
That's the worst, Lula said. That's like shopping death. You better take me with you. I'm good at shopping.
I thought you were getting your nails done.
I'll get them done tomorrow. I can see you need my help here.
Hal parked in the lot at Quaker Bridge Mall, and we all trooped into Macy's.
What's Valerie's size? Lula asked.
I don't know. She's put some weight on since the last baby, and she doesn't discuss size.
What about a scarf? A scarf fits all sizes.
I don't think she's a scarf person.
How could someone not be a scarf person? Everybody's a scarf person.
I've never seen you wear a scarf.
Yeah, but that's me. I don't like to wear something that takes attention away from my girls.
We wandered past the scarves, handbags, and lingerie. Nothing jumped out at me as being perfect for Valerie and in my price range.
Perfume? Lula asked. Candle?
Albert has allergies to certain scents. We moved out of Macy's into the mall. Lula led the way. I followed Lula, and Hal followed me.
Here's one of my favorite jewelry stores, Lula said. They got the best fake diamonds. You can't tell the difference. And they got stuff that looks like it's old. It's the family heirloom collection.
Valerie doesn't wear jewelry anymore, I said. The baby grabs it.
They got an Arthur Murray dance studio here, Lula said. You could give her dance lessons. Or how about a hat? You could get her name embroidered on it. They do it while you wait.
We all stopped and had giant pretzels and ice cream and went to the second level. We passed by Mr. Alexander's, Classy Nails, and a wig shop.
There's a novelty store here that has all kinds of good stuff, Lula said. They have about 40 different kinds of vibrators. You could get Valerie one of those. What girl doesn't want a vibrator?
Somehow, I couldn't see Valerie at the table unwrapping a vibrator while my mother cut the birthday cake.
There's a bookstore here somewhere, Lula said. I've never been in it, but I saw it advertised. Maybe she would like a book.
She has 4 kids, I said. She hasn't got time to read.
That's a shame, Lula said. Everyone should read.
Do you read?
No, but I think about it sometimes. Problem is, I go to a bookstore and there's so many books I get confused, so I get coffee. I know what I'm doing when I order a coffee.
Hal looked like his feet hurt, and he would be thankful for a lobotomy.
We've been walking around for hours, Lula said. I'm out of ideas, and Hal and me need to get back to the deli.
Suppose it was your sister, I said to Lula. What would you get her?
That's easy, Lula said. I'd get her one of them bedazzler kits. They got them in that novelty store with the vibrators.
Done and done. We stopped at the card store on the way out of the mall, and I got a big gift bag, some pink tissue paper, and a card. I stuffed the bedazzler into the bag, signed the card, and I was ready to party. I called Ranger and told him I'd be with Morelli for Valerie's birthday dinner, so I was sending Hal back to the deli with Lula.
I'm going to have to give Hal a combat bonus, Ranger said,
and he disconnected. Chapter 12 Hal walked me to my parents' front door, and in the absence of Morelli, turned me over to Grandma Mazur. Morelli arrived 20 minutes later.
Am I late?
He asked. No, I said. I was early. Is there any new information on the shoe snatcher?
We have a medical report on Vinny that suggests he was shot in the back with a dart gun. That's probably how he was taken down.
Would a drug work that fast?
It could, depending on the drug used and the amount administered.
Anything else?
No, he doesn't remember anything. We've canvassed both neighborhoods multiple times and haven't found any witnesses. No one heard screaming or shots fired. If the bad guys are driving the victims away, they must be using a commonly seen car that's completely unmemorable.
Vinny is the odd man, I said. He's the only one who was taken from a different location, and he's the only one who was returned.
Maybe he wasn't up to standards and the aliens pressed the reject button.
I could easily see this happening. My parents' dining room table normally seated 6. Tonight, it had been expanded to seat 9, plus a high chair. It was a small house with a small dining room that now had wall-to-wall table.
It's 6 o'clock,
my father said.
They're late. They're always late.
The front door crashed open, and the girls rushed in. Angie, the grade A student, Mary Alice, who thought she was a horse, and 2-year-old Lisa. Baby Bert was in a sling contraption that draped around Valerie's shoulder.
Lisa made poo-poo in her pants, Mary Alice said. She's stinky.
That's not an acceptable thing to say, Valerie said. Stinky is a hurtful adjective.
Well, she don't smell like roses, Grandma said. I'm pretty sure she's stinky.
My father was already at his seat at the head of the table.
Where's my ham? It's after 6.
Albert Clown, Valerie's husband and the father of 2 of her 4 kids, came in last with his arms filled with presents and the diaper bag slung over his shoulder. Clown is my height, has thinning, sandy-colored hair, a face like a cherub, and a body like the Pillsbury Doughboy. He's sweet, but clueless. This is an especially bad combination for him, since he's a lawyer. My sister Valerie was the perfect child all through school. Her long hair was sleek and blonde. Her grades were excellent. She was never caught smoking or sneaking out her bedroom window, and she actually liked to attend mass. I was the problem child. I broke my arm trying to fly off the garage roof, smoked my first and last joint at Girl Scout camp, and I could see no point in learning to multiply and divide when I had a calculator that did it for me. Valerie's hair is still sleek and blonde, and so far, no one's caught her smoking. Her perfection was slightly marred when she divorced her philandering first husband, but she's still one up on me because she's remarried now and has given my mother grandchildren. The closest I come to grandchildren from my mother is a hamster. Grandma took Lisa to the bathroom for cleanup, and everyone else worked at squeezing themselves around the table. I helped my mother bring the food out. Virginia baked ham, red gravy, mashed potatoes, green beans, applesauce, and macaroni salad. Angie took a small portion of everything, and Mary Alice sat with her arms crossed over her chest.
There's no hay, she said. What am I supposed to eat? Horses eat hay.
You're not a horse, Grandma said, sitting Lisa in the high chair. Have some ham.
I don't like ham, Mary Alice said. I like hay.
Grandma looked at Valerie. Are you feeding this child hay?
Of course not, Valerie said. She has a wonderful imagination.
Well, she better imagine she likes ham or she's not getting birthday cake, Grandma said.
Albert and I don't threaten the children with punishment when they're simply expressing their preferences, Valerie said. We try to show them alternative solutions.
Valerie turned to Mary Alice.
You could pretend that the ham is hay. Wouldn't that be fun?
Mary Alice kept her arms crossed and looked at Valerie like she had corn growing out of her ears. My father had ham and potatoes and macaroni piled on his plate.
Gravy,
he said. Morelli passed the gravy, and my mother joined us at the table. She had a tumbler of dark amber liquid that she passed off as iced tea, but we all knew was whiskey. She was in survival mode. Lisa had been given mashed potatoes, small pieces of ham, and applesauce. She dumped it all onto her high chair tray and smeared it around. She threw her spoon across the table and mashed a handful of glop into her hair.
Valerie smiled serenely at Lisa, and it occurred to me that Valerie's mood might be helped along by some form of controlled substance now that she was no longer breastfeeding. Morelli had his arm draped across the back of my chair. He was calmly sipping wine and smiling. This was low stress for him. His family was even crazier than mine. His brother has been divorced twice and married three times, all to the same woman. They have so many kids, I lost count, and that's just the tip of the Morelli family iceberg. His grandma Bella dresses in black like she's an extra in a Sicilian mob movie, and she gives people the eye. If you annoy her, you run the risk of getting boils and having your hair fall out. Stan Malinowski said Bella gave him the eye, and he had penis shrinkage. Clown was wearing his lawyer uniform of chinos, a wrinkled white dress shirt, and a red and blue striped tie. He poured red gravy over his ham and potatoes, leaned across the table to get the salt, and the tip of his tie dragged across the gravy. He dabbed at his tie with his napkin.
"No problem," Clown said. "Valerie buys my ties on the cheap off the internet, don't you, Cuddlumpkins? They look just like real ties, except they're made in China, and you don't want to get too close to a flame."
My mother slurped down iced tea, and Valerie poured herself a glass of wine. My father had his head down, shoveling in ham.
"What's going on with the shoe snatcher?" Grandma asked Morelli. "Any new developments?"
"No new developments," Morelli said.
"Are you talking about the deli manager disappearances?" Clown asked. "Do you know what people are saying? They're saying it's aliens."
"That's what I figured," Grandma said. "They're beaming up managers. Probably need them for some intergalactic resort."
"I never met the man who owns the deli," Clown said, "but I represented his Aunt Sissy in a lawsuit. If you ask me, the whole family is screwy."
"Did you win the case?" Grandma asked.
"Not exactly," Clown said. "Sissy drove off a bridge on her way to my office one day and killed herself. I think it was accidental, but I guess there's no way to know for sure. She might have had a few drinky-poos before getting behind the wheel."
Clown tucked his tie into his shirt and carefully cut his ham.
"She was 93 when she died."
"Imagine that," Grandma said. "Only 93.
The ham was dripping with gravy, and Clown leaned close to his plate to eat.
"She had a lot of things to say about her nephew Ernie. She said he was a weird kid, like he wanted to be emperor of the universe. Personally, I don't think that's so weird. I mean, lots of people want to be emperor of the universe, right? Anyway, I guess he always had a lot of schemes going while he was on his path to world domination. Sissy said he would always do anything to make money. When he was in seventh grade, he sold his little sister to one of his classmates."
"How did that work out?"
Morelli asked.
"Sissy didn't say," Clown said, "but I know they aren't on good terms. He might have tried to sell her a second time in high school, and he had aspirations of being a movie star. He has a bunch of movies he made on YouTube."
"Real movies?" Grandma asked.
"They're like homemade movies," Clown said. "Some of them are a little S-E-X-Y.
"Daddy watches sexy movies," Angie said to her mother. "Is he a perv?"
"No," Valerie said. "He's a Taurus."
When we were done eating, I helped my mom clear the dishes. We brought the cake to the table, sang happy birthday to Valerie, and she opened her presents. I was the only one to give her a bedazzler kit. I ate two pieces of cake and pushed back from the table, debating whether I should return to the snake pit to take another shot at capturing Waggle. If I didn't get him tonight, it would be a week before I'd get another chance. Truth is, a lot could happen in a week. Waggle could get beamed up by the shoe aliens. He could choke on a chicken bone. He could become a Buddhist monk and move to Nepal. All these possibilities sounded good to me. The party was over at 8 o'clock. Valerie rounded up her kids and went home, and Morelli drove me back to the deli.
"What's the plan for the rest of the night?"
Morelli asked.
"Do you want me to hang around while you lock up?"
"No, not necessary. You can go home, and I'll have Hal drive me to your house when I'm done here." He kissed me, told me to be careful, and waited until I was inside the deli before he pulled away. Only two customers were still lingering in a booth when I walked in. Stretch was busy cleaning his station, and Lula was taking inventory for the purveyor orders. Raymond was squatting down behind the counter, sneaking a smoke. I didn't see Hal. "Where's Hal?" I asked.
"He took out the trash,"
Lula said. "How long ago?"
"Not that long, maybe 10 minutes.
"Have you checked on him?"
No one's gonna beam up Hal. He's the size of a rhino.
I went to the register, looked at the monitor, and went breathless. There's something on the ground by the dumpster, I said. Tell me it's not a shoe. Lula looked at the monitor.
It could just be a piece of garbage, she said. Sometimes garbage could look like a shoe.
Lula, Dahlia, and I went to the back door and stared out into the parking area. No Hal. A large black running shoe was beside the dumpster.
Hal, Lula yelled. Come on out and quit joking on us. This isn't funny.
Silence.
This is freaky, Lula said. Hal isn't even the manager.
I went to the monitor and used the rewind function to scroll back. I stopped the rewind when I saw Hal walk out the back door with a bag of garbage. He went to the dumpster, tossed the bag in, and turned toward the back door. He paused and looked left. Something obviously had captured his attention. He crossed the lot to investigate and moved off the screen. Time passed. Hard to say if it was a single heartbeat or 10 minutes. I couldn't drag my eyes away, and I couldn't breathe. And then suddenly a shoe sailed into view from the left side of the lot and landed by the dumpster.
Holy crap, Lula said. Holy hell. Holy moly.
I saw car lights flash in front of the deli. I hit the real-time button on the remote and saw two rangeman cars pull up and park in the back alley. Ranger was the first one through the front door. He was followed by two more rangeman patrolmen.
Is anyone missing other than Hal? Ranger asked. We saw him go off the screen and he's not responding.
No, I said. Just Hal. No one was watching the monitor when it happened. We realized he was missing and I hit rewind. We saw the shoe come over and then you arrived. I followed Ranger to the back lot. Can Clean Dry Cleaners was next door to the deli. It was a storefront operation that sent clothes off-site for cleaning. Doors were shuttered at 7 o'clock. The lot was used for pickup and delivery and employee parking. It was currently empty of vehicles. A small dumpster sat to one side. A private home was next in the lineup. It had a high brick wall enclosing its small backyard. Narrow alleys ran between all the buildings on the street. Ranger's men were setting up extra lights and crime scene tape. Did you call the police? I asked Ranger.
No, I want to comb the scene before they contaminate it. I'll bring them in when we're done here. Keep everyone inside until I talk to them and put the closed sign on the door.
This is getting old, Dahlia said. Bad enough all the managers disappeared, now it's anyone who goes out the back door. And every time someone goes missing, we have to hang around until the police dismiss us. I'm done. I'm out of here. I quit.
I would quit as well, Raymond said, but I am unfortunately needing my paycheck. I have debts that will be painful to my person if I fall behind.
I looked over at Stretch. He was slumped in a corner booth, nodding off.
He will stay, Raymond said. He gets nicky-nacky from the lady who works in the cleaning establishment next door. It's not so easy to get good nicky-nacky on a regular basis.
I was afraid to ask what constituted good nicky-nacky, so I just nodded my head in agreement. At least neither of them were quitting.
I'm feeling stressed, Lula said. I'm worried about Hal. I'm beginning to doubt my theory about space aliens. It's one thing to beam people up for experimental probing and then return them to Earth. This feels different. This feels more like there's a maniac out there, and I'm not in favor of maniacs.
I wasn't in favor of maniacs either, and I had a sick stomach. Three people associated with me were missing. I felt like two were directly my bad. Wayne Kulicki and Hal wouldn't have been in harm's way if it wasn't for me. I felt especially sick over Hal. He was a good person, and he'd been abducted while trying to protect me.
The worst part is now that it might not be aliens, we don't know what's happening to these people,
Lula said.
I don't even want to think about it. They could be, you know.
Dead, Raymond said. I fear someone is doing a very bad thing.
I went to the back door and stood next to Ranger. His men were systematically inching along the blacktopped parking area next to the deli looking for clues. Did you find anything? I asked him.
No. The cameras scanned to the dry cleaner's dumpster. Hal walked past the dumpster and out of camera range. He obviously thought the situation was benign. He didn't have his gun drawn. He didn't look concerned. We haven't found any signs of struggle. No blood, no torn clothing.
Have you seen the latest medical report on Vinny?
The one that suggested he might have been shot with a trank dart? Yes, I have that report. It would explain the lack of evidence showing there was a struggle.
What about Hal's shoe?
We haven't touched the shoe. CSI will test the shoe, but I'd be surprised if they find anything. Shoes from previous victims haven't been helpful.
I told him about my conversation with Wolf.
I heard he was in town, Ranger said. Hard to believe he's investigating the disappearances. I'd be more inclined to believe he's responsible for them.
Where do you go from here?
I use my resources to find the missing people.
And
I go proactive.
What does that mean? I asked him. How can you go proactive?
I can take Hal's place.
Oh my God, you're going to work here making sandwiches? Ranger backed me into the wall and leaned into me.
You think I can't make sandwiches?
I've never seen you make a sandwich.
You've seen me do other things. Have you ever seen me do anything badly?
He had the hint of a smile curling at the corners of his mouth, and his eyes were dark. This wasn't a display of ego. This was foreplay, and it went straight to my doodah. I had a rush of heat erupt in my chest and head south. I'd been intimate with Ranger, and it wasn't an experience easily forgotten. It wasn't an experience any woman would want to forget. Who's going to run Rangeman if you're in the deli full-time?
I can run Rangeman off-site.
Hal had other responsibilities besides making sandwiches.
Hal was here to keep you safe, Ranger said.
And now you're going to keep me safe?
Full-time.
Morelli isn't going to like this.
I'll hand you over to him when we close at night, and I'll expect you back in the morning. If you aren't with Morelli, you're with me.
Truth is, I didn't mind the arrangement. I wasn't exactly Rambo, and I didn't want to be the next victim with one shoe on and one shoe off. Two Trenton PD patrol cars arrived 5 minutes after Ranger made the phone call to report Hal missing. Jimmy Crute showed up 10 minutes later. Morelli was a couple minutes behind Crute. I'd made the call to Morelli. I stayed close to the building in front of the open back door. Morelli and Ranger were standing toe to toe beyond the dumpster. Morelli was hands on hips, his cop face firmly in place, focused, alpha dog posture. Ranger had his back to me. His arms were relaxed at his side, but his stance was solid, shoulders back from years in the military. Ranger was alpha dog times two. There was professional respect on both sides, and there was personal distrust simmering below the surface. Morelli cut his eyes to me, his gaze held for a couple beats, and his attention returned to Ranger. They were talking about me. Their intentions were probably good, but I felt like I was being auctioned off on eBay. Hey, I yelled. Do you want to include me in this conversation?
No,
Morelli said. I couldn't see Ranger's face, but I knew that got a smile from him. I did a massive eye roll, called them idiots, and retreated into the deli, slamming the door behind me.
You look like you need pie, Lula said.
I looked around the room. It was empty. Where is everyone? I asked.
Dahlia quit. She said if anyone wants to talk to her, they can kiss her ass and good luck finding her. She said she was going to get into her car and start driving west and not stop until she hit the Pacific Ocean. Raymond and Stretch went home. They said unless you were going to start paying overtime, they weren't staying late no more.
What kind of pie do we have?
Apple, coconut custard, lemon meringue, but I wouldn't recommend it, and chocolate pudding pie.
What's wrong with the lemon meringue?
It smells like cat pee, Lula said.
I went to the fridge and pulled out a chocolate pudding pie and extra whipped cream.
Bring two forks, Lula said.
We dug into the pie, and I looked over at Lula. What's going on here? What's the motive? What's with the shoe?
Maniacs don't always have motives, Lula said, at least none that makes sense. Like maybe the devil told someone to snatch people and leave a shoe behind.
Suppose it wasn't the devil. Suppose it was someone more normal. Why would someone want to take people associated with the management of the deli?
That's a tough one, Lula said. And why did they snatch Hal? He wasn't a manager.
Maybe Hal was a mistake.
Okay, so who would benefit from having bad things happening at the deli? Lula asked. There's Ernie Sitz, but he's supposed to be on the moon or something. I don't see how this would do him any good, except maybe he would be looking for revenge. Like if he couldn't have the deli, then no one could have it.
If that was a motive, he could just torch it.
Yeah, but that wouldn't be as much fun, Lula said.
hadn't thought of this in terms of fun, but I suppose it was as good a motive as any. What about the bodies, I asked. Where are they?
That's got about a million answers, Lula said. They could be on a hook in the deep freeze of a butcher shop, or they could be in a shallow grave in the Pine Barrens, or they could be still alive and chained up in someone's cellar. I don't think they got thrown in the Delaware because one of them would have floated up by now.
I didn't like any of those answers. I put my head down and forked into the pie.